Have you ever thought about making a global impact in medicine? Or maybe you're interested and passionate about emergency medicine and how to care for underserved individuals directly in the emergency room. Or maybe you're interested in learning how to balance being a founder of a nonprofit organization and an attending all at the same time. Well, today, you're in for a treat. I'm happy and honored to have a conversation with Dr. Mabola Kokoyi, the founder of the M. Kokoyi Foundation and an emergency medicine attending in Illinois. Let's jump right into the episode. Roll the music. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Med Connect podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jasmine Weiss. We affectionately call this podcast the B-Med Connect podcast, and I have a wonderful, wonderful guest with us today. I'm excited. She's a friend, a dear friend, someone who I've known since medical school, and she is an attending. So this is an attending edition of the B-Med podcast. And so with that, I'd like to introduce Dr. Mabola Kokoyi. I'm excited to have her here. She is an emergency medicine physician in Illinois, and she has her own nonprofit organization. So we'll get to hear all about that and hear a little bit about her career path. So thank you so much for joining me here today, Mabola.
Thank you. Thank you, Jasmine. It is a pleasure to be here. I'm super excited about BMed and all you're doing to help raise health awareness, medical education, help inspire the next generation. Super proud of you. And thank you for having me here today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So could you share a little bit about your journey, a little bit about how you were brought up and your upbringing and what inspired you to pursue emergency medicine?
Absolutely. So I was born in Lagos, Nigeria. So Nigeria, the curry left. So I came to the States for college, for school to become a physician. And what I found attractive about emergency medicine is you never see the same thing twice. You know, you go into work, you really don't know what to expect. So you are taught a variety of skills that you can use in any setting. And that was important to me because, you know, I'm Nigerian. I do a lot of global work. And so I wanted to learn skills that I could use anywhere in the world. Travel is a big passion of mine. And sometimes people were like, well, you're a jack of all trades. I'm like, maybe, but really, I'm a specialist at resuscitation. I can stabilize you anywhere. So that was really the draw to emergency medicine for me. I wanted skills that I could transfer and use anywhere in the world.
I love that. I never really thought about how you're a specialist at resuscitation. I love how you put that. And did you know you wanted to do emergency medicine early on, or kind of how did you get there with your decision?
So I actually went into medicine because I wanted to be an OBGYN. And so when I was like 10 years old, when I was young, I used to read a lot. Things of medicine, no, you barely read non-medical stuff. Well, I used to read a lot as a child. And my dad brought me this book everywhere. I don't know why he brought me that book at 10, but he did. And I just got so fascinated with OBGYN. And so, you know, Jasmine mentioned we went to medical school together. So, we got to Duke thinking I was going to be OBGYN. But then I did an emergency medicine selective in my second year. I was like, whoa, this is nice. But what was also nice was I can remember the day vividly. I had to renew my driver's license. I renewed my driver's license. I had lunch. I got a shift. I still got one before midnight. I'm like, wow. If I had a regular 8 to 5, you know, you have to take time off work because the DMV is open 8 to 5. So I do things in my regular life in the daytime, still go to work, I still get up at midnight. I was like, oh, this is nice. And so that was the draw. You know, it's flexible. It's transferable. You can bunch your shifts together. You take some time off, but just that flexibility and that transferability of skills was really what drew me to emergency medicine. But OBGYN was my first passion.
Ah, excellent. It's so interesting you say that because you're absolutely right. If you have an 8 to 5, trying to do the simple things in life can just be a huge challenge. So just that flexibility and adaptability, as you described, you know, makes it something that a lot of people may find appealing. So can you talk a little bit more about that? What does a typical week look like for you?
So the advantage of emergency medicine is its disadvantage. I hope that makes sense. So the fact that your week varies can be a disadvantage because you don't have the predictability. You know, we work shift, your circadian rhythm is up. So the reason why we love it is the same reason why we have those challenges. And so in a typical week, luckily our job, you know, we try to make things in a cascading rhythm. So if you're working mornings, you do mornings, afternoons, evening, nights, you just don't go from morning to night. So they try to make a nice flow. So in a week, you could work 3, 4, 5 shifts, depending on, you know, on your scheduling. And the beauty of emergency medicine is when you're off, you're off. I didn't want to carry a pager. I didn't want to have to follow up on labs. I didn't want to have to review things, you know. Often I do do that because I'm kind of a little bit of a geek, a nerd. If there was an interesting case, I would follow up. I want to know what happened. I really struggled with EM, IM, IM, internal medicine, just because I like investigating further. So I would say sometimes I do read up on it. But you don't have to do that. You can leave your shift and be done. You can be as involved as you want or not as involved as you want. And then if I'm working in the afternoon shifts, maybe I can like run errands, get my hair done during the daytime, or still go to work. Those are really nice things about it.
Absolutely. And I like that. So sometimes you choose the follow-up because you're right. You kind of stabilize the patient, help them get to where they're going to be in the hospital. But then following up to see what happens next is something that, you know, you may or may not get to do. So I love that.
So that's how you learn, right? You don't know it all. So the next time I see a patient like that, because I know the final diagnosis, I'm like, well, this looked like the case I had last year. This is what I should order, you know, so that I love that I'm able to kind of follow up, and I encourage anybody that goes into EM that that's a good skill to do.
Exactly. Absolutely. Keep the knowledge base growing and growing with each patient that you see.
Absolutely.
I love that. And so here on the BMed podcast, we often want to think about and talk about health disparities. And then from your perspective, you have the opportunity, I'm sure, in the emergency room to see how that manifests itself in a variety of ways. And then from a global health perspective as well, there's obviously global disparity. Could you speak to a little bit of the disparity that you see, you know, in your day-to-day job? And then we'll later come back and talk a little bit about the global disparities and what your foundation does.
Okay. So from a day-to-day perspective, I would say there's a difference usually in health literacy. And so I have patients be on a bunch of meds, do not know the name of the medications or why they're on it or why their doctors change them. And then if I don't have access to their medical records, I might be able to play a guessing game. There's just also health literacy in terms of, oh, I didn't know I could even ask my doctor that. You know, I didn't know that I could still empower to be part of my decision making. And so you see patients with that late stage disease. And even in terms of medications, you know, oh, I didn't realize I had to take that at the same time every day. And so there's a lot of education that you have to provide. And in the emergency room, you're kind of short for time-ish because, you know, you feel like I can't spend 30 minutes trying to teach you about this. But even in the clinic now, you know, we're having to see more patients per day. There's really just a lot of demand on the health system. And I think that we need a revamp. I don't know what the solution is, but it's clear that there needs to be something else, you know? So I don't know where we can have access, where we can begin to teach our people X, Y, Z. This is why you should care about your health, feel empowered to talk to your doctors. We need to do more of that. I just don't know what the solution to that is. But everybody's pressed for time. Primary care doctors are pressed for time. Specialists are pressed for time. So where can we make impact? And that's what we're all trying to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up such a great point. It's that access to care burden. And we don't think of our patients as a burden. But as you said, when you have so many patients to see and just not enough time, you have to figure out how we're going to allocate our time and what can we do in the time that we have? And how do we continue to make sure we can get to everyone we're supposed to see, whether, like you said, it be in the emergency room or for me in the office. You bring up such good points about health literacy. And just for our audience, would you mind sharing a little bit more, just a little detail as to what do you mean by health literacy?
What I mean is just even having just a basic idea of disease processes and how they affect you. And I like to use heart disease as an example. So if I come to you and you say, Mabola, I have heart disease. And I say, well, what type? And you say, I don't know. And because heart disease can be heart failure, which means your heart is not pumping well. It could be you have blockages in your heart, which puts you at a high risk for heart attack. It could be that your heart is just big. You just have a big heart. And, you know, each category is different. The symptoms are different. Treatments are different. And so what I encourage patients is when your doctor tells you you have a condition, ask, what is this? And you don't have to ask them the first visit. You can say, let me get back to you. Go on the internet, come up with some questions and say, you know, what is X, Y, Z? Could you explain it in detail to me? How is it different from, you know, B or C? So that when I see you in the ER, I can kind of get a better idea and put you in different risk buckets. And so it's just really having even just the basic, you know, you're not going to be a specialist at your condition, but just having the basic knowledge of what exactly you have, what risk it poses to you, and even your medications. You know, when if your doctor says, take this medication twice, they ask, how does the medication work? What does it do to me? And be empowered. We want you to be empowered, because when you're empowered and you're vested in your care, you actually do better. Outcomes are better. Health literacy, in my mind, isn't, you don't have to be a specialist in the condition, but just having a basic knowledge of how it works, what it is, and things that can help you be better.
Absolutely. I love how you explain that. And I basically try to say, you know, from our perspective as a physician, I often try to say, how do we break this down in the most simplest terms that we can? Because a lot of times that's an issue too. If a physician may be explaining a condition in a very complex way, a patient may not understand. So like you said, having patients ask questions if they don't understand something and being empowered, I love that. I love that.
A lot of it is, you know, there's a power play, and I can understand from the patient's perspective, they may not feel like, oh, they want to, you know, ask the docs. I'm like, it's okay. We want you to ask. We want you to understand. And honestly, if you have a primary doctor and you don't feel comfortable talking and having that good relationship, it's okay to find somebody else you have that relationship with. Because for you to have a good health outcome, you have to be in partnership with your doctor. It can be a one-way street, you know? So like, change docs if you have to. Make sure that you feel listened to by your doctor, because really that's, I think, in my mind, the best way to have the optimal health outcomes that we all want our patients to have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Are you interested in taking a deeper dive with Black Med Connect? Then join our Black Med Connector newsletter. Each week, you'll hear more about our guests and go behind the scenes to get a deeper dive into their careers. You will get the professional productivity word of the week, and you'll get to see and learn more about amazing physicians doing wonderful things in entrepreneurship and innovation. So head on over to bmedconnect.com/podcast and join the Black Med Connector newsletter. Back to the episode. And do you feel like if you had to kind of place yourself in the ED, can you think of some times where not only you may see health disparities or differences in health literacy, but we also know that our system is riddled with racism in a variety of different capacities. Can you share a time or a story where maybe you witnessed a patient experience something, or even while you were in training, if you experienced anything that may have been related to what we can improve on as a health system with racism?
I would say that I've been lucky with the racism that I have kind of seen. They've really been on the micro level, not the macro level. They're not like blatant. Well, what I would say is I can speak to my experience, how patients have mentioned, you know, they don't want to see a color doctor, you know, or because I have an accent, or where are you from? And I just smile, you know, I'm like, well, you speak English very well. How is that? And I'm like, well, I speak English well because English is my first language. That's how I grew up. I've had patients mention, oh, wow, you must have really had to work hard to be here, you know, because you're Black. And I'm like, you know, you probably meant that well, but it didn't land well. Yeah. So you see things like that. In terms of racist behavior towards patients, I've just been lucky that I have not, again, see that on a macro level where I work. But then you have the little insinuation, you know, the studies about how we were perceived, Black people were perceived not to, you know, have as much pain as our non-Black counterpart. So I try to innovate, you know, I try to be like, let everybody, let's step back and do a chart review. Everybody's an individual. So I try to innovate when I can. But even when I talk to, you know, patients of color, I'm like, you have to empower yourself. Well, even not just patients of color, just everybody across the board. Treat your providers as well with respect. So the same way you want us to respect you, please respect us. Because again, it's human. Even if I see you on the street, it doesn't even matter who you are, you know, just treat that respect as a human. So I feel in general, the healthcare system needs more respect of one another, you know, polite, courteous. And again, feeling empowered to speak out, but not in a disrespectful way, but just how you want it to be treated. So I treat my patients how I want to be treated. And I think if we all go back to that, treating others how we want to be treated, I think we will make a lot of impact.
Absolutely.
Now, I think just the pressure of time is affecting that relationship, but sometimes just being conscientious of that. And so what I do is I would sit. So if I find out that the ER is going crazy to center myself, I would sit. You know, and that just gives 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be with you sitting for 5 minutes. You know, I want to hear you out. studies have shown that just that sitting also gives people the perception that, wow, you know, they're listening to me. But I think it's really just being aware of our limitation. I'm just really just trying to work things out. So yeah, thankfully from a macro perspective, I haven't seen a lot of racism, but it's just the little everyday microaggressions. Deal with that. You can shrug it off. So it just really depends on my mood. I can shrug it off. I can address you, or I can just, you know, be like, it's not even worth it. It varies day to day.
It does. It varies based on what amount of time you have left versus, you know, how egregious something may be as mm-hmm. well.
Like the one patient that told me she didn't want to see a black doctor. I said, well, kind of unfortunate. I'm the only doctor here. So worry about folks.
Exactly. Exactly. And I love what you said about that mutual two-way street, that partnership. That's what healthcare is all about, really forming partnerships with your patients in the time that we have to see them and care for them. And so what advice would you give to a trainee who's interested in emergency medicine?
Can you narrow that?
Yeah, sure. So let's say a medical student who says to you, comes to you and says, you know, I really like the show ER, which I'm aging myself, right? I really like the show Chicago Med. Maybe that's a little better.
Yeah, that's a little better. Let's act like we're 24, we're 25. Yay.
Yes. We're back in that era. What advice would you give to them if they came to you with that?
The first thing I would say, Chicago Med, ER, nothing like the ER. I think the ER, sure, is actually probably the closest reality to the ER right now. We're not like Chicago Med. When I watch Grey's Anatomy, I have to stop watching Grey's Anatomy. I'm like, how do you kind of show go for? But that's not real. That's not real. I mean, there are some parts that are real, but it's not TV. The people's lives. You don't come in for the excitement. These are human beings' lives. Every day you make decisions that can change lives. You know, so like real serious business, you know, just go have fun. And then secondly is it's not every day saving lives and cutting the chest open and doing CPR. Most of ER is bread and butter. And honestly, sometimes it can be boring. You know, you're like, okay, chest pain, abdominal pain. Thankfully, we want that because you don't want to be doing CPR every other hour. You get burnt out quickly. But I tell people, it's not all what you're seeing on TV. A lot of it, you have to be okay with the bread and butter of the profession. And even not just an EM. And somebody gave me this advice as a medical student. In any specialty you want to go to, be sure you're okay with the bread and butter. So ask yourself, if you never do a chest compression or you never cut open a chest for the next 6 months, would you still be okay with your profession? You know, so that's what you want to answer. And then there are lots of positives, like I mentioned, the flexibility, just the skills you have. But it can also affect, you know, other areas of your life because you don't have a regular schedule. So, for example, if my friend has a birthday dinner on a Friday night and I'm working, I'm missing that social interaction. Sometimes you can request days in advance. A lot of times you can, but things come up, you know, and you have to work to switch shifts. The shift work can be challenging because you have morning, night. Some people solve that by being only nocturnal, so they only work nighttime. And a lot of people with young children actually do that because they work in night shifts. They come home, take their kids to school, sleep while their kids are in school. And then by the time they pick up, they wake up. So it works well for people with young children. But even without children, it's a way to say, okay, I have a schedule. I only work at night. But just to be aware of the challenges of your specialty. And again, this will go for any specialty. If the worst thing of a specialty were to happen to you, could you deal with that? You know, so not thinking of the land is going to be great. Think about if this is the worst thing. If I had to do crazy shift every 2 days, would I still be okay with that? So that's how I would advise somebody. And I think if you consider all of this and you're saying, I'm fine, I'm ready to like jump in and put my hand on the chest, you know, but I'm okay with 6 months not doing that. I don't care about my sleep schedule. Fine. EM is for you.
Yeah. I love how you kind of have the sense that each thing is a pro or a con, just depending on who you are, right? If you want that flexibility of needing days, you can do that. If you want that excitement, you will get that, but you don't always get that, right? So it's kind of that back and forth. And I love that bread and butter kind of analogy to really think about what are the basics in your field that you're going to see every day, day in, day out. For me, if I didn't like ear infections, I'd have a problem as a general pediatrician. So
Runny noses and cough.
Exactly. So that's fantastic advice. Hopefully some trainees are gonna kind of hear that advice and take heed to it. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. I had a great discussion with my dear friend, Dr. Mabola Kokoyi. And if you enjoyed the first part of our episode, then stick around and join us again next week for part two, where we'll finish talking with Dr. Kokoyi and learn all about what she does from a global health perspective. So I got a few questions I need to ask. Have you subscribed yet to our YouTube channel? Have you subscribed yet to listen on any podcast platform? If not, we need your help. We are looking to get to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, and we're also looking to build our podcast subscribers as well. And with every listener, we appreciate you and value you and share, share, share. So if you haven't done so already, head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the Black Med Connect podcast. And if you like listening to your podcast, wherever you listen, whether that's Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, we ask you to hit that subscribe button. So we'll see you next week. And until next time, dream without limits. Bye.